If your credit card bills have gotten out of hand, call Consolidated Credit now. If you're making the minimum payments, but your balance is just not going down, call Consolidated Credit now. If the interest rates on your credit cards are so high, it will take years to get out of debt, call Consolidated Credit now. They've helped over 5 million people with credit card debt. They can consolidate your debts into one lower payment, reduce your interest rates, and get you out of debt fast. If you're struggling with credit card debt, the first step is yours. Call Consolidated Credit now. Call 800-350-3241. 800-350-3241. That's 800-350-3241. Consolidated Credit Counseling Services Incorporated, 5701 West Sunrise Boulevard, Fort Lauderdale, Florida, 33313. Not a loan company. Licensed by the New York Department of Financial Services and by the Vermont Department of Financial Regulation. Maryland DM19, Oregon DM80031. Licensed by the Virginia State Corporation Commission, license number DC32.
From the campus of Yale University, this is Business Talk with Jim Campbell, nationally syndicated across the country on the Biz Talk Radio Network and coming to you from our flagship stations, Yale Radio WYBC and 1490 AM WGCH Greenwich. All talk and all business, 60 minutes of radio with leading figures from the world of business along with the business of politics and sports. Called one of the axis of evil nations, a nuclear threat, an implacable foe of the U.S. We go inside Iran today on Business Talk with Jim Campbell. Misa Parsa is a professor of sociology at Dartmouth, where I was lucky enough to attend and get my MBA. It's a special place up there. And Misa specializes in Middle Eastern and Asian studies. He's got a book out called Democracy in Iran, Why It Failed and How It Might Succeed. I want to welcome the professor, and I want to thank Dartmouth Broadcasting, Heath Cole, for setting this up where they're coming from. So welcome, Professor.
Thank you very much for having me.
By the way, are you from Iran?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Let me start off with democracy and Iran. That seems kind of like an oxymoron, trying to put them together. We get this impression of the U.S. that it's a monolithic, you know, kind of theocratic culture. Talk a little bit about that first.
Well, the Iranian Revolution that took place in 1979 actually meant to produce democracy and freedom in Iran, and unfortunately ended up producing a political system that became theocratic. And Ayatollah Khomeini, throughout the revolutionary struggles, promised that the new system, the Islamic system, will provide freedom to everybody, even including Marxists and communists would be free. As long as they weren't engaged in conspiracy against the system, they would have political freedom. So everybody was promised political freedom, and everybody expected to have political freedom and democracy. But unfortunately, it ended up to become a theocratic state that denied political freedom to the vast majority of the population, except those who had the power.
All right, we're going to get into more detail on that, too, in the next segment. First, I want to start off with some more recent information for folks. The Iran nuke deal was just recertified by the U.S., which was somewhat of a surprise because Trump had run against sort of tearing it up. I want to get your comments on that. Have they been adhering to the spirit of the law? Was this a good decision?
Yes, pretty much that's what has been going on. The sanctions were very severe on the Islamic Republic, and they finally decided that they had to agree with the international community, the five plus one. And apparently all the reports show that they have not violated any of the principles that they agreed to.
At the current time, are you comfortable saying that there are moderates with some degree of power in Iran or not?
Yes, there are a lot of moderates, but the problem is that the power rests not with the moderates, but with the supreme leader and the unelected organizations that are under his control, the Guardian Council, Assembly Experts, and Expediency Council. These are not controlled by the moderates. So the moderates that get elected either to the parliament, the majlis, or to the presidency have actually very little power. And the supreme leader Ayatollah Khamenei can veto anything they decide. So on everything, basically, he has the ultimate say, and the moderates do not really contribute much to the final decision-making.
Do they have a goal of a Shiite caliphate, you know, sort of stretching from Lebanon to Syria? Is that a real goal of theirs, and to destabilize the Middle East?
Well, they have been talking from the very beginning of the revolution to export the revolution to the rest of the region. But sometimes the claim is that Ayatollah Khamenei, who is the supreme leader, he's actually the leader of the entire Islamic world. So the Shiites, constituting the majority of the population in Iraq, they had a chance to export the revolution. And Ayatollah Khomeini, at the beginning of the revolution, encouraged the Iraqis, the Shiites, and so forth. They had been working with them before the revolution even. And after the revolution, they intensified their work to promote the causes of the Shiite population in Iraq. And so that ultimately resulted in the Iran-Iraq War, 8 years of war, that was devastating for both countries. And also it threatened the Ayatollah's encouraging rebellion in other parts of the Middle East, threatened Saudi Arabia and other powerful countries in the region that ended up siding with Saddam Hussein to prevent the Islamic Republic's expansion. So there's also the Shiite population in Lebanon that they have organized the Hezbollah and all that. But to take over the entire Middle East, I would say that's a little bit of a stretch.
Getting back to the Iran nuclear deal for a second, whether they've adhered to it, I read that they supposedly produce more uranium and heavy water than they're allowed. They've tested some nuclear-capable missiles, as we know. They've threatened to attack U.S. ships. Are they adhering to the law, first off, and are they adhering to the spirit of the law?
Well, you know, there's a little bit disagreement on this issue, but I don't think attacking the United States, and there are claims occasionally that a couple of days ago, the commander of the chief of the armed forces said that the United States should move their bases about 1,000 kilometers away from Iran, and so threatening to attack. But Iran is no match for the United States or even for Israel. These are just claims they make to pretend that they're very powerful. In fact, the more important issue has to do not with their foreign policy, but with Iran's domestic policy and bases of support. The Iranian government, the Islamic regime, has lost the support of much of the population. And the real issue is here. They constantly try to instigate external conflicts in order to promote national support, promote social cohesion and national support to stay in power. That's exactly what happened with the hostage crisis. That's exactly happened with the 8-year war with Iraq. The real issues lie there, not with real conflicts with the United States or Israel.
That's interesting. And it's somewhat similar to what Putin has done in Russia, too, which is, you know, look for external conflict to try to unite internally. Does Iran still have a goal to eradicate Israel?
Well, they keep stating it. But during the war with Iraq, they bought arms, and later on some of the leaders of the Islamic Republic were dealing with Israel. And so there are allegations that those things happen. But they talk about death to Israel. But here the interesting issue is that, if you're interested, when we talk about the Green Movement, and they keep talking about it during the Green Movement, but people really don't take it seriously.
We're going to talk about the Green Movement in more depth so people know exactly what that is. I want to ask another recent one, though, that they recently sentenced this Princeton student who was doing research on his doctorate to 10 years in jail, charging espionage. That's a pretty bad thing, isn't it?
Yes, the student is in trouble, and part of the problem is that when they get arrested, sometimes they get tortured, and I don't know what they're going to do with the student here, the Chinese-American, but in the past, when they arrest students or visitors, they end up torturing them, and then they will, under pressure, sometimes extreme torture, they end up admitting that they spied or they are spies, they're on a mission, whatever you want to say, and then they sign a statement and sign it, and admitting that they have done while they hadn't done anything. And so this is a very unfortunate situation. Last night, President Trump, the White House, stated that Iran should release all Americans held in jail. There are a few of them, not a lot. But this has been a regular practice that they have been doing, using the visitors or students or scientists that go there for visits or conferences, things like that. They end up in jail, and they are used as bargaining chip against the United States or other countries. And now the White House statement last night is very ominous. So
let me ask you in our last minute of this segment, what's your own Iran story? Why'd you leave?
Oh, I left in 1970. I was a student. My family was poor and didn't really much of a future. And I served in the army, and I decided finally that I need to go abroad and to get a college education. I didn't have any money, so somebody suggested, if you don't have money, Europe is not a place for you. Just go to the United States. And he suggested you can go to college and work. And that's exactly what I did. I came to the United States in 1970, and I ended up not being able to go back.
Very interesting. You're listening to Business Talk with Jim Campbell over the Biz Talk Radio Network, 350 stations around the country. Go to biztalkradio.com, find the station closest to you, listen over the Internet, access our archive of podcasts, and we'll talk with Misa about why democracy failed in Iran next.
There's more than one way to invest in your education. Investing in the right products, securities, and real estate generates secure and sound futures. What about an investment that retains its value? Consider college real estate. College real estate can provide housing for students and generate returns for their families. Through this special offer from Austin iLabs, you can download the free workbook from collegerealestate.com to see if this investment is right for you. Go to collegerealestate.com/radio.
Hi, I'm Joan London. If you're worried about your parent or loved one living alone, like I was, and you want reliable senior care information, then call A Place for Mom, the nation's largest senior living referral service.
Finding an apartment that was on the courtyard with the view of the trees, the view of the ducks, the stream, the creek, all of that, that was what I needed.
You'll get free information on assisted living, Alzheimer's care, nursing homes, even important financial information. Here's the number.
To speak to a local senior living advisor, call A Place for Mom at 800-506-0320. That's 800-506-0320.
A Place for Mom is a free service, and you can trust them to help you. So if you're struggling to find reliable senior living information, there's a place for answers, A Place for Mom.
To speak to a local senior living advisor, call A Place for Mom at 800-506-0320. That's 800-506-0320.
Paid non-attorney spokesperson Adam Pulaski of the Pulaski Law Firm with principal office in Houston, Texas is the attorney responsible for the content of this ad. This ad is not legal advice, and the choice of a lawyer should not be based solely upon advertisement. Services may not be available in all states.
Attention Xarelto users. If you or a loved one took Xarelto and suffered a serious bleeding event, you may be entitled to financial compensation. Xarelto is a popular prescription blood thinner used to prevent blood clots and protect patients from strokes. These serious bleeding events have led to numerous cases of hospitalization and even death. Phone lines are open 24/7. Call 800-425-1023. That's 800-425-1023.
Hi, I'm Joan London. If you're worried about your parent or loved one living alone, like I was, and you want reliable senior care information, then call A Place for Mom, the nation's largest senior living referral service.
Finding an apartment that was on the courtyard with the view of the trees, the view of the ducks, the stream, the creek, all of that, that was what I needed.
You'll get free information on assisted living, Alzheimer's care, nursing homes, even important financial information. Here's the number.
To speak to a local senior living advisor, call A Place for Mom at 800-506-0320. That's 800-506-0320.
A Place for Mom is a free service, and you can trust them to help you. So if you're struggling to find reliable senior living information, there's a place for answers, A Place for Mom.
To speak to a local senior living advisor, call A Place for Mom at 800-506-0320. That's 800-506-0320.
Are you ready to leave your corporate job behind and be your own boss? Have you ever dreamed of owning a business? Do you have $50,000 or more sitting around in a 401k? If you answered yes, it's time to invest in yourself by buying or starting a business or franchise. IRS code allows you to use money in a 401k to invest in a business with absolutely no penalties or taxes. At Guidant Financial, we've helped more than 11,000 entrepreneurs invest $3 billion in retirement assets into the small businesses and franchises of their dreams. So if you've got $50,000 or more in a 401k and you're looking for a way to start a business, call Guidant Financial now for free information and to learn more. Operators are standing by for your call. 800-570-6630. 800-570-6630. 800-570-6630. That's 800-570-6630.
Biz Talk Radio.
And we're back with our guest, Dartmouth professor, Iran expert, Misa Parsa. And we're going to explore why democracy failed. And it's a fascinating topic because most Americans don't even know that that was on the table when the 1979 Iran Revolution happened. We view it almost as the end of Jimmy Carter's presidency because of the hostage crisis and the Ayatollah's impact. So go back a little bit and give us some history on this and what was promised versus what was ended up.
So the 1970s, Iran's oil revenues increased as a result of the OPEC oil embargo in 1973. So Iran's revenues quadrupled basically about a year or two after that. And so a lot of money, petrodollars, came into the country, produced inflation, but also high levels of inequality. Those who had access to the big banks and government financial institutions could borrow the money and then invest and make a lot of profit. But a huge portion of the middle class and working class were not served. To deal with the problem of inflation, the Shah of Iran imposed an anti-profiteering campaign and ended up arresting a bunch of merchants and putting them to jail. And these merchants had been supporters of Dr. Mossadegh in 1953, and they wanted to have greater freedom. So once this anti-profiteering campaign started against merchants, we call them bazaaris in Iran, and they started becoming politically more antagonized against the regime. And then finally, President Carter was elected, and he pressed for human rights and advocated human rights in some of the countries that were repressive, had authoritarian regimes. So the Shah of Iran reduced political repression, and to some extent in response to President Carter's advocacy of human rights, and that prompted the opposition to demand political freedom and civil liberties. So that gradually brought in the moderate opposition, the liberals who were supporters of Dr. Mossadegh, and then gradually leftists and socialists and students who were largely socialists in major universities, they joined in, and the bazaaris joined in after that, and that sort of challenged the Shah's regime, basically. None of these things happened for quite a while. And in the summer of 1978, the Shah decided to respond to some of the demands of the opposition and introduce greater reforms. Once those reforms were introduced and greater political freedom was granted, the working class and the middle classes started joining the opposition, and that nationalized the protests against the Shah's regime. And so by the time you get to the December of 1978, the vast majority of the population in Iran are against the monarchy and calling for independence freedom and Islamic Republic. So throughout this period, Ayatollah Khomeini made a large number of statements from Iraq and then from France, from Paris, and that promised political freedom day after day. Political freedom, there is no democracy, and the clergy should work with students and intellectuals. It's the intellectuals, and these are the people who will become lawyers and government ministers and presidents, prime ministers, and you work with them. And his own place, he said, was in the mosque, and he would have nothing to do with politics. And so all the promises were very good, and he received the support of the vast majority of the population. Once he returned, the provisional revolutionary government that was in office was primarily composed of liberals. And so they ended up writing a constitution that was very liberal and sort of European model of the constitution they had adopted way back in 1906. And so it was supposed to be everything democratic, but suddenly the hostages were taken, and then they changed the provisional government led by Prime Minister Bazargan. They resigned, and then a theocratic constitution was written up, and under the threat of conflicts with the United States and American attacks and so forth, and repression of dissent and dissidents, he managed to get the population to vote in favor of the constitution. And as the process continued, class conflict also intensified. So the poor, the working class, everybody was mobilizing. Khomeini suddenly shifted from actually a little bit earlier than the constitution, that the Islamic Republic was to serve the interests of the downtrodden. They called it the Mustazifin. And that he gained the support of the left. This was a situation, I meant support of the working class, and he marginalized the left. I apologize for the confusion. Marginalized the left, gained the support of portions of the working class, and throughout the next period, he also used intense repression. Shut down newspapers, you name it, arresting dissidents, putting them against the wall and shooting them. And so between June of 1981 to September 1985, Ayatollah Khomeini executed or killed during armed struggle about 12,000 people. Many of these, about 4,000 of them, were students, college university students, and closed down the universities for at least 2 years and executed a large number of people in Kurdistan, in the Turkmen region, and basically ended up demobilizing the opposition during that period. And after that, basically, the opposition couldn't really challenge Ayatollah Khomeini. Then came summer of 1988. The Ayatollah executed, the war ended, and as soon as the war ended, he ordered the execution of something like at least 5,000 people who were in prison. Some of these people had finished serving their terms and were about to release, had not been released, and some of them were about to be released. So these people were executed, and the opposition lost basically having any claim because everybody was silenced. By that time, everything ended. And for the next 10 years, there was no conflict going on, no little protests here and there, but nothing, until came the protest of the students in 1999.
It's almost, to me, I kept thinking of Castro in Cuba doing the same kind of bait and switch, coming in as a Democrat, and Batista's corrupt regime would be out, and then sort of switching everything to, in Iran, you get death for homosexuality, women treated as a second class as well. We have about a minute to go. Let's finish up on this failure of democracy with a little bit on the Green Movement, and then we'll talk more in the next segment.
Well, the Green Movement happens 10 years after the student movement, and this happens in 2009. The student movement came in 1999. 10 years later, the Green Movement came, and the movement was in response to the disputed presidential 10th presidential election. Ahmadinejad claimed that he won, and before the voting ended, Ahmadinejad was claiming he won, and then Mir Hossein Mousavi, who was the opposition candidate, former prime minister, 8 years of prime minister during the war, and he was claiming he won, and that instigated the Green Movement.
Coming next, we'll look at how might democracy succeed in Iran and more on what we were discussing on why it failed.
National Funding Group has just released $100 million in easy access small business funding to businesses that gross at least $100,000 a year. You can have fast access up to $500,000 in new business capital in as little as 48 hours. Think about the ways you could grow your business if you had up to a $500,000 cash infusion. Call a NFG funding expert now. The process is easy. It only takes about 5 minutes. Then our management-owned lending team looks at your application for a fast approval. You can get 100% funded in about 2 days. If you need up to $500,000 in working capital to run your business and you gross at least $100,000 a year, call NFG and apply today. 800-296-1564. 800-296-1564. 800-296-1564. That's 800-296-1564.
How old are you? 25, 35, 50, or older? If you have pain, we can help. Do your knees hurt?
Ow!
Let me ask you again. Are your knees killing you?
Oh, yeah. Are they ever?
What about your back? When you bend over, does it feel like this? How about when you get out of bed in the morning? If you're like me, your knees and back feel like this.
Oh, that hurts.
I found a company called the Pain Relief Hotline. They specialize in ways to treat your knee, back, and neck pain without surgery or taking medications. The good news is if you have insurance, you may have little or no cost or out-of-pocket expense. I've used them. It works. Call the Pain Relief Hotline now for free information. 800-303-4607. 800-303-4607. Call now. 800-303-4607. That's 800-303-4607.
Here's George Foreman with InventHelp.
Hi, I'm George Foreman. Do you have an idea for a new product or invention? People ask me all the time, George, how do I get my idea in front of companies? How do I get a patent? What do I do next? Do you have the same questions? I'll tell you like I'll tell them all. Call my friends at InventHelp.
Call InventHelp today for free information. InventHelp has been helping inventors for more than 30 years and has sales offices nationwide. InventHelp can submit your invention to companies who are interested in receiving new ideas. If you have an idea and want to try to patent it and submit it to companies, you should call InventHelp today for free information.
Listen, I can't guarantee a company will be interested in your idea, but I believe every inventor deserves the opportunity to step into the ring and take their best shot. Put InventHelp in your corner.
To get your free inventor's information, call 1-800-351-1453. That's 1-800-351-1453. Again, 1-800-351-1453.
I owed the IRS $10,000.
The IRS garnished my wages.
They put a lien on my house.
The IRS is the most powerful collection agency in the world. They do not give up until you pay.
I couldn't sleep. We were being audited. I called Tax Solutions Now, and a great big weight was lifted off my shoulders.
I called Tax Solutions Now, and they got the IRS off my back.
Tax Solutions Now had my wage garnishment lifted in 48 hours.
Tax Solutions Now can get you help. Our agents know the rules, can stop the pain, and get you the best deal. We connect you with a team of former IRS agents and tax professionals who will get the IRS off your back.
We saved our home and overcame the most powerful collection agency in the world.
Call Tax Solutions Now. Time is running out.
Call 800-979-0166. 800-979-0166. 800-979-0166. 800-979-0166.
0166.
Tired of paying outrageous prices for Viagra? Well, we have great news for you. Now you can finally get Viagra at huge discounts. Healthy Man allows you to save up to $500 on Viagra. Why pay U.S. pharmacy prices of $15 per pill or more when you can get Viagra for less than $3 a pill? Call today and get 40 Viagra pills for only $99. This can cost as much as $600 at your local pharmacy. You can't afford not to call us. If you want Viagra at the lowest prices, never pay $15 a pill pharmacy prices again. Get Viagra for less than $3 a pill. Call 1-800-521-9579 today and save up to $500 and get 40 pills for just $99. Healthy Man is fast, easy, and affordable. Operators are waiting at 1-800-521-9579 to take your call right now. Call 1-800-521-9579. That's 1-800-521-9579. Again, 1-800-521-9579.
Biz Talk Radio.
We're back with Misa Parsays, the author of Democracy in Iran, Why It Failed and How It Might Succeed. And where I wanted to start here is because I found this very interesting, this framework that you've devised about how an autocratic regime, to get to a path to democracy, can go reform or revolution. And you cite South Korea is succeeding in that, and the Philippines and Suharto in Indonesia failing in that. So we'll talk a little bit about that. But just to give people a perspective, I guess when the initial revolution came in 79, the standard of living in Iran and South Korea was about equal. This is 1980. And by 2009, when this green movement started, the standard of living in Iran was one-third the level of South Korea. So talk about your reform or revolution sort of paradigm.
When I started writing this book, I realized that neither political sociologists nor political scientists had developed a theoretical model, a perspective that would tell us about under what conditions authoritarian regimes could become democratic through political reform, under what conditions authoritarian regimes had to go through revolutionary struggles to become democratic. And so there was no model, and so I divided the countries that I was studying, South Korea, Indonesia, Iran, the Philippines. I have also studied Nicaragua and Egypt to some extent, and developed about 10 variables that examined under what conditions a country can become democratic through reform, under what condition there has to be a revolution. So South Korea was a country that economically became very successful, although were similar in 1979, 1980, similar level of development. South Korea actually industrialized very rapidly and developed economically. And by 1987, South Korea was actually a democratic country, although the military won the elections a few years after that. But finally, the military was pushed aside, and through reform, and there wasn't a violent overthrow of the government. In Indonesia, that did not happen. Indonesian economic development was not as successful as South Korea. They were still dependent on oil. Income inequality was very extensive, much more than South Korea. And in 1988, with the help of students and the poor, in 1998, the government of Indonesia, then President Suharto, was finally overthrown after 35 years of power, staying in power. The question was that what way Iran could go. And given the fact that Iran's economic development has been very, very unsuccessful, a very failed example of economic development in the Middle East and in actually the whole world, Iran's per capita GDP in 1976 peaked to about $13,300. That's $2,005. By 2009, Iran's per capita GDP had declined to about $9,400. So that's 30 years of decline for these people. So economically, they lost. Income inequalities, the Gini coefficient shows that by that time, the Gini coefficient, which measures inequality, declined a little bit. But the Gini coefficient really doesn't show the real face of inequality in Iran. What happened after the revolution, once the clerics seized power, they were able to seize the assets, the economic resources of the monarchy, the royal family, the entire upper echelon of the capitalist class, many of whom fled the country. Some were executed. Many of them fled the country. The clergy seized all of them and put into foundations to support the poor, the mustazifin. But everybody in Iran is now poorer. The clergy is the wealthy category, along with the Revolutionary Guard. So the Gini coefficient doesn't show that inequality increased, because that portion of the wealth that was owned by the wealthy people, the royal family and the rest of their associates, more than 1,000 families, were all expropriated and do not go into the equation when they measure income inequality. So that's the crux of the matter, and it shows that slightly more equal distribution of income, but also doesn't show inequality in wealth. In the early 1990s, there was a survey in Iran that showed 77% of the Iranians claimed intense anger about the distribution of wealth and income. So based on that comparison for South Korea and Indonesia, just on the distribution of wealth and income and success or failure of economic development, I'm claiming, arguing that Iran's economic development resembles more like Indonesia rather than South Korea. And failed economic development reduces support for the government, reduces support for reform, because people have lost everything. Reform is not going to solve their problems. The whole system has to change fundamentally. And that fundamental change in part revealed itself in the demands of the protesters during the Green Movement.
And why didn't the Green Movement ultimately succeed?
Excellent question. It's very complicated. The problem with the Green Movement was that, the first problem was that the leaders of the Green Movement, former Prime Minister Mir Hossein Mousavi, who claimed he had won the elections, and his associates and colleagues, they wanted to work through the system. These were people that didn't want to overthrow the system. At the beginning of the protests, he called the Islamic Republic as a sacred system. And he said a number of times that we are not in favor of calling for the overthrow of the regime and so forth. So the problem was that the vast majority of those who were involved in the Green Movement, a week after the movement started, they were calling for death to dictator. They were calling for independence, freedom, and Iranian Republic as opposed to Islamic Republic. And they were calling a lot of radical slogans. They were shouting very radical slogans. And one day, I remember it was the Quds, you know, the Jerusalem day, that loudspeakers were shouting slogans and people were supposed to follow them. So the loudspeaker says, "Death to America." And the protesters, who were Green Movement, participated in that day in favor of Jerusalem. They weren't shouting "death to America." They said, "death to Russia." Then the loudspeaker says, "death to Israel." So they're supposed to be saying "death to Israel." And this is the Jerusalem, the Quds Day, and they were saying "death to China," because they view Russia and China as close allies of the Islamic Republic, and they didn't have problems with the United States or Israel. And so I kept listening to all these YouTube reports. One after another, they kept coming, and there was almost nothing that you could hear after the loudspeaker said. There was no voice that says "death to America" or "death to Israel." This was very shocking. So the extent of division between the people and the regime is just amazing, shocking. They have moved so far away from each other. And so the first problem was that the leaders of the movement didn't want to go far. The movement participants in the streets wanted to go much farther and being done with the Islamic Republic and the regime. So that was the first problem, that they did not succeed. The second problem was the fact that the opposition didn't really prepare themselves for the repression that was coming. And the repression, the Islamic Republic has been very skillful as arresting people. Thousands of people were arrested immediately as the Green Movement started. And they weren't prepared to hide them or protect them, their members and their supporters and so forth. But the bigger problem had to do with the fact that to overthrow a regime or a government, you need to have a very broad coalition.
Yeah.
That's what Ayatollah Khomeini kept making all the promises prior to the revolution, making sure that every segment of the population would side with him and would participate in the revolutionary struggles to overthrow the Shah. That broad coalition did not emerge in the 2009 Green Movement. The opposition failed to bring in the merchant class that had played an important role in the revolutionary struggles, but also the working classes. The individual merchants and individual workers participated in the revolutionary struggles, but they did not participate as classes and collectivities, and that's why, in part, they were repressed. And the final reason that they failed was the fact that this movement was very large. It began like 3 million people on June 15 of 2009 in Tehran City came out and protested. If we take a look and compare the 3 million with the 1979 revolution, when population, of course, was smaller in Tehran, but it took about 1 year in Tehran to have a 1 million population coming and joining the protests. 1 million took about 1 year to join the struggles against the Shah. In 2009, in 2 days, basically, 3 million showed up, and this was huge. And throughout the country, other major cities, hundreds of thousands of people everywhere came and joined in the next 2-3 days. And so there were millions of people who were protesting. The problem was that medium-sized and smaller cities did not join in.
And in our last segment, we'll find out if this convergence can happen. Stay with us. It's Business Talk with Jim Campbell.
Due to an upturn in the economy, Main Street Business Loans has pre-approved the release of millions of dollars in small business funding. Your business may already be pre-approved to receive up to $250,000. We've sent out millions of pre-approval letters. We see the economy growing, and our underwriters believe now is the time to invest in your business so you can grow faster and make more money. And we're prepared to give you up to $250,000 to do it. Your funds can be available in 5 days. There are no application fees, no annual fees, just quick access to up to $250,000. If your business did not receive your approval letter to get up to $250,000, call Main Street Business Loans Approval Desk now.
800-430-7570. 800-430-7570. 800-430-7570. That's 800-430-7570.
If your credit card bills have gotten out of hand, call Consolidated Credit now. If you're making the minimum payments, but your balance is just not going down, call Consolidated Credit now. If the interest rates on your credit cards are so high, it will take years to get out of debt, call Consolidated Credit now. They've helped over 5 million people with credit card debt. They can consolidate your debts into one lower payment, reduce your interest rates, and get you out of debt fast. If you're struggling with credit card debt, the first step is yours. Call Consolidated Credit now. Call 800-463-1749. 800-463-1749. That's 800-463-1749. Consolidated Credit Counseling Services Incorporated, 5701 West Sunrise Boulevard, Fort Lauderdale, Florida, 33313. Not a loan company. Licensed by the New York Department of Financial Services or by the Vermont Department of Financial Regulation. Maryland DM-19, Oregon DM-80031. Licensed by the Virginia State Corporation Commission. License number DC-32.
This alert just came in. This special announcement is for business owners and leaders of organizations who've been waiting for the right time to build. General Steel has made it impossible to wait any longer with rock-bottom prices that could save you thousands. That's right, General Steel, America's leader in pre-engineered structures, is offering buildings at prices you will never see again. Don't miss these prices. A 50 by 100 for under $30,000. You heard right. That's 5,000 square feet under $30,000. Manufacturers, if you need a larger building, try a 100 by 100 commercial building for $129,000. You can't afford to rent with these prices. Imagine a 70 by 100 foot church building for under $69,000. With the economy improving and interest rates still at historic lows, you can't afford to wait.
Call 800-605-5370. 800-605-5370. Call 800-605-5370.
Do you want to fly somewhere, anywhere in the world? Smart travelers call MyFlightSearch.com for the best deals on flight tickets. Going to Manila, Bangkok, London, how about Singapore? Call MyFlightSearch.com for the lowest flight tickets available. What about a local vacation? Let's say you want to fly to Vegas, Orlando, Miami, Los Angeles, or Denver. Pick up the phone and call MyFlightSearch.com right now. We have exclusive deals that you can't find anywhere else. The only way you can get these low airline prices is by calling us. We have so many low prices available, we can't possibly tell them to you right here and now. If you're flying somewhere anytime in the next 6 months and you want the lowest airline ticket prices anywhere, you owe it to yourself to save a ton of money. So pick up your cell phone and call MyFlightSearch.com right now.
Call 800-303-3398. 800-303-3398. That's 800-303-3398. Call now. 800-303-3398.
Hi, I'm Joan London. If you're worried about your parent or loved one living alone, like I was, and you want reliable senior care information, then call A Place for Mom, the nation's largest senior living referral service.
Finding an apartment that was on the courtyard with the view of the trees, the view of the ducks, the stream, the creek, all of that, that was what I needed.
You'll get free information on assisted living, Alzheimer's care, nursing homes, even important financial information. Here's the number.
To speak to a local senior living advisor, call A Place for Mom at 800-506-0320. That's 800-506-0320.
A Place for Mom is a free service, and you can trust them to help you. So if you're struggling to find reliable senior living information, there's a place for answers, A Place for Mom.
To speak to a local senior living advisor, call A Place for Mom at 800-506-0320. That's 800-506-0320.
Biz Talk Radio.
We're back in our final national segment. Dartmouth professor Misa Parse, he's been parsing opaque Iran. So let me ask you this, the students, the working class, the small business, the merchant class, as you said it, is there a chance they can come together to make this happen? Do we want a revolution, or is it in our interest in the U.S. that it be a failed state?
It's, I think, in the interest of Iranians, but also in the interest of the United States and the whole world to promote democracy in Iran. And a failed state is going to be a source of all kinds of problems for domestic and the population, but also other people in the world. So failed state is not something. A lot of some of the problems with terrorism, that's where they come from. But can I finish the segment that we just finished talking about how the Green Movement failed?
Okay.
So what happened was that because the medium-sized and smaller cities did not join, the problem for the Islamic Republic was that there were divisions in the Revolutionary Guard, which is a huge problem. And not all the Revolutionary Guard were in favor of repressing the Green Movement and the opposition at that time. And so the government had to resort to just security forces, but also to their paramilitary, with called Basij over there, the paramilitary forces. What happened, they didn't have enough paramilitary in Tehran, and the security forces were not able to repress the Green Movement. That's how why it lasted for about 20 months, which is huge. And so because the smaller and medium-sized didn't join, they were able to bring the Basij, the paramilitary forces, to Tehran and larger cities and repress the opposition.
Can I ask you, you mentioned the Revolutionary Guard. What is the balance of power between the clerics, the theocratic regime, and the Revolutionary Guard?
Right now, the clergy has the upper hand, of course. The clergy runs everything. They call all the shots. And Ayatollah Khamenei, who is the supreme leader, he's the one. But they are very much have become very much dependent on the Revolutionary Guard, particularly after the Khatami's administration. So they give the Revolutionary Guards a lot of economic assets and resources. They win 70-80% of all the contracts with the government. So it has become, controls about 25% of the GDP, has become a major participant in the economic activities of the country. So they control the guns, but they also control a great deal of the gold in the country, including the oil sector, gas, you name it, they're everywhere. So the Islamic regime needs the Revolutionary Guard. Without the Revolutionary Guard and the support of at least the upper echelon of the Revolutionary Guard, they cannot. But the Revolutionary Guard is not calling the shots. It's the clergy that's doing it. It's possible in the future they may come into conflict and the arrangement might change, but right now it's the clergy that has the control.
All right, now let me ask you this. Your theory is reform or revolution. You've ruled out reform. Do you believe there, you've gone through the history of failed attempts at democracy in Iran. Why do you feel that a revolution is inevitable and that it will be successful, or don't you?
Given the structure they have created, it's an exclusive state. An exclusive state doesn't allow anybody. Look at all the presidents and prime ministers they have had. Anybody who came to power was finally eliminated, disgraced. Prime Minister Bazargan during the hostage crisis. President Banisadr after him. Mm-hmm. And President Khatami, two-time president, he's disgraced. He can't publish his picture, print his picture, or publish his statements in the media. He can't travel abroad. The latest one, you can just keep going. The list is very long. The latest one is Mahmoud Ahmadinejad. He was president for 8 years. Ayatollah Khamenei defended him. He said he won, and his ideas are closer to my own, and and so he's the president and all that, and his government is very clean. Now, in the recent election, he was told by Ayatollah Khamenei not to participate. He said, you are polarizing, and don't participate in this election. He said, okay, he won. But then he went, and he went forward, and he registered to participate. Of course, then he was quickly, immediately disqualified and eliminated by the Guardian Council. And now you think about it. Why is it Ahmadinejad was told by the Supreme Leader not to register and not participate? Now, when you look at it, has his statements and interviews he has given, Mr. Ahmadinejad likes to be in the opposition because he realizes that the vast majority of the Iranian people are in the opposition against the Islamic Republic. So he now wants to become popular among the opposition. That was the secret of him trying to participate and then being discredited. Now he can claim that I'm against the system, and he keeps making statements about the problems of the Islamic Republic. So the system is theocratic. Iranians had at least cultural freedom, social and cultural freedom. If a woman doesn't want to wear the scarf, the hijab, she was free before the revolution. If a person wants to drink alcohol, they were free. You want to go to a bar, discotheque, and dance and listen to whatever music you want to listen and whatever channel you want to listen to and station. And so they had cultural freedom and social freedoms. And what happened with the Islamic Revolution, Islamic Republic, they lost that promise of political freedom. They didn't gain the political freedom they were promised. They lost their economic standing compared to what they had in 1978, 79, or 1976. They are poorer now than ever before during the monarchy. And so the problem is that they were promised all the freedoms. The problem, they lost the social freedoms they had. So basically they have lost in every area of social life. And that's why I'm thinking that the conflict between the population and the Islamic regime is irreconcilable. To survive, the Islamic regime has resorted to what I call endless repression. When I mentioned the number of executions between 1981 to 1985, or then 1988, the Islamic regime in the first 4 years executed several times more people than the Shah killed during the revolutionary struggle. And that doesn't include the executions of pro-monarchists that I'm not including, but also religious minorities such as Baha'is. They are not included because they are prisoners of conscience and they are executed because of their belief system. So those are not included. Last week there was one in Shahr-e-Rei near Tehran, part of Tehran, suburb of Tehran, and another clergy was beaten up. And it's just, it happens all the time. The conflict is more serious than being just initiating small changes and reforming a piece of the system.
And that's been a fascinating, enlightening hour. In fact, it shows me how little we understand what's going on inside Iran, and that the other big insight is that I've gained is that the internal threat is bigger than the external threat for Iran. Misas' book is Democracy in Iran, Why It Failed, How It Might Succeed. This has been Business Talk with Jim Campbell. I want to thank Misas Parsa at Dartmouth. Thanks to our national audience for listening. See you next Sunday on Business Talk with Jim Campbell.
The opinions you hear on Biz Talk Radio are those of the hosts, callers, and guests, and do not necessarily reflect those of this station, Biz Talk Radio, its management, or advertisers. The information on Biz Talk Radio does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities. Please consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions about Biz Talk Radio, contact us at 817-274-1609 or at biztalkradio.com. Biz Talk Radio.